fucking awesome. Come on, it's gonna be fucking awesome.
You know the words.
It's gonna be fucking awesome.
That's insane.
It's gonna be fucking awesome.
Hello, my friends. It's the Coolest Geek Alive here. I'm coming at you hot. I just did my second day at the gym, my third day of doing a new like routine for myself that I've been wanting to add into my life for a very long time. Very proud of myself. 3 days in, and I'm not stopping. And I'm excited. So feeling good, all energized from that. And I got it done before my show, even though my show will be a little bit late today. But last week, we talked about Godzilla. And Godzilla, I talked a little bit about it being a franchise that you had to like read into. You had to add your own reality to it in some ways. And if you got turned on to Godzilla as a kid, it's easy to, you know, as Godzilla's knocking down those buildings and you're going, oh my God, the people in those buildings. And like, you know, you're extra empathetic to this person got crushed, being crushed. These buildings are on fire. You're on fire. Oh my God. You know, so there's like a visceral experience that goes on with the Godzilla concept, this giant monster coming in and whatever else. Similarly, there are some basic visceral concepts that come along with Masters of the Universe, the Masters of the Universe franchise, which makes it my favorite untapped franchise of all time. It is the best kept secret on planet Earth as far as I'm concerned. And one of the main bits of it that makes it so cool is just that it is a mix of sci-fi and fantasy. There are a few other properties that I've come along over the years that have this great mixture done right. Marvel Universe is doing it a little bit, you know, kind of making Thor into, you know, high technology kind of thing. But Rifts, which is a great role-playing game that I used to play all the time, and I plan to play again with some friends soon. I don't have any ongoing games going, but love Rifts. Rifts is another game. It's a post-apocalyptic future where these ley lines have erupted on planet Earth, and now magic is available to people if they want it, but also it's the future and there's all this high technology and these aliens are, you know, there's basically the Earth has become like a dimensional nexus point. So there's just like everything is available on Rift's Earth, which is why it's such a great place to play games, do role-playing games. But that mix of fantasy and science fiction together, it's not there. Like, it doesn't exist anywhere else. Not really. Not a lot. And it's so simple. You know, because of the nature of the Masters of the Universe line, which was and I'm kind of like laying this out because I feel like there are people who know Masters of the Universe and everybody who knows it's going to, you know, everything I say, they're going to be like, yes. But the people who don't know, it's like, I don't get it, you know? This is like essentially the origins of the Masters of the Universe. They were considering doing a line of toys for a Conan action figure line, and they had a whole bunch of different designs and stuff that came in. They ended up not doing the Conan line, but they still had a bunch of designs that had been mocked up. They started working on their own line, and some of the designers came in with some stuff that mixed technology in. Because part of the thing, the line of these He-Man things, was that everybody was going to like be able to do something, you know, have like an action, you know, there were different things that they could do. They could punch or they could karate chop, you know, this was like the Kung Fu grip, but the next level, you know, they wanted each of these toys to be, you know, some point of interest. You know, I mean, there's two guys who turn into rocks. Clamp Champ has a little clamping thing, and Fisto's got a big fist, and, Jitsu would karate chop. Now, the names and everything that I'm just saying right now, like, these are the things that I think ultimately has made everybody shy about the brand and shy about taking it seriously, because the names are just so over the top, you know, right down to He-Man. And the big problem with He-Man is that he's the least interesting character in his entire universe, because everybody else has this mixture of, you know, technology and magic, you know, sort of abound. And he's just kind of this like super barbarian. But within the Superman archetype is some really simple and universal things going on that are just recipes for success. Fawcett Comics did it with Captain Marvel who then became Shazam, as most of you people know him now, Zachary Levi Shazam. Shazam, the idea that a child would turn into the super being. So instead of Superman being this like above you thing, you could be Superman. And He-Man is an I can be Superman type of concept. Prince Adam, who's, you know, this scrawny little thing, you know, he gets the power of He-Man and beefs up and he's He-Man and he could be this thing. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on within the He-Man thing that are like old tropes that are kind of annoying. Like, you know, the premise of He-Man, it needs to be moved forward, his secret identity thing. You know, it was just sort of like a tripe that sort of aggravated storylines. And in order to really mature the character and to do things with the character, you got to bring that aspect forward and have him be beyond that, as you know, being He-Man and trying to figure out how to do it. There's a lot of things intellectually as a writer and a producer that I could make an incredible fucking He-Man. Like, oh my god, I've talked about this before. I'm a toy guy. I'm a big toy guy, and He-Man is one of my first loves. And these designs that these early designers for Mattel made for the Masters of the Universe, they are just so evocative. I mean, Beast Man, who's one of my favorite simple color designs, the orange with the white around his face and the blue in his eyes to pop off the white and the orange. There are so many amazing color combinations. That's one of the best things about the Masters of the Universe line, was that the colors, they popped. The toys looked so different from one another. And again, the genesis and the nature of the way this franchise took place. On the toy shelf, you want the different characters to look decidedly different from one another. And the color choices would just be incredible. And these are this sculpture. I love sculpture, man. You know, a beautiful sculpture of something that you've never seen before. And in the case of Mattel's Masters of the Universe line, there's been this amazing interpretation over time, the same way that you have in comics, as Frank Miller comes in and he's like, I'm going to take all my favorite parts of Batman and I'm going to add some of my own stuff to Batman. You know, as a group of artists, because then new artists would come in and new toy designers, as they're like, all right, well, if we're going to do the Masters of the Universe in 2000s, you know, now that Spawn's been around, you know, and they brought in Four Horsemen Studios, who did a lot of the amazing work on the original lines of Spawn and Total Chaos and Wetworks and all those great lines that came out. That was all Four Horsemen Studios, and a lot of it Eric Treadaway, who I believe is the reincarnation of Da Vinci. I mean, he's just like incredible, one of the most incredible artists. I hired Four Horsemen Studios to do color designs for my King of Kings comic book, because we had so many characters and I wanted them to pop off the page and I wanted them to, you know, be decidedly different from one another, like I'm talking about with these action figure line. You know, that's something that you want, visually speaking. The benefit of a comic book and these toy lines are that these things are thought about from a visual standpoint and from a dynamic standpoint very deeply. It's just all about creating dynamics. Visually is the big one, but even, you know, within comics, it's story dynamics and, you know, Cyclops against Wolverine, and, you know, this guy doesn't get along with this guy. This guy gets along with this guy. You know, those are the things those relationship dynamics are so major. This guy's the arch nemesis of this guy. This guy used to be friends with this guy, but now they're enemies. You know, these are just all different sorts of archetypes, basic archetypes that exist in life. You know, you've got somebody who used to be your friend, but now he's your enemy. Well, I mean, I don't have anybody right now, and hopefully you don't have anybody like that. But at times in your life, you've had that, you know, where you had a friend and then you guys became enemies for a little while or whatever. I hope you guys, I'm not trying to wish enemies on anybody. Care Bear stare to you all. But you know what I'm saying. The Skeletor to the He-Man. And, you know, that's one of the things. Like I said, He-Man is the weakest character in his thing, because he's basically, you know, a Conan ripoff to some degree. He's a Conan mixed with Shazam, mixed with Superman, mixed with Thor. Kind of ripoff, but he's got a badass ride, man. He's got a green tiger, and that was just a tiger toy that they had made previously, and they put a saddle on it and colored it green and yellow. I have Battle Cat tattooed on my arm, or on my shoulder, representing my grandmother protecting me from the other side. But the evocative nature of that simple choice. Somebody was like, "Hey, I put a saddle on this thing that we already had, and then I thought maybe we could put him on the saddle, and now he's not Conan, now he's He-Man." Which is really like the main difference. And like, you know, his powerful, his magic sword and sayings, "I have the power." But I mean, this is the simplest. He-Man is a Superman type character. He's a total altruist with essentially all the power in the world. You know, "I have the power." He's a classic archetype, you know, somebody to look up to. You know, I said, "I'm going to the gym." I'm going to the gym because I've always wanted to look like Superman. I've always wanted to look like He-Man. I've always wanted to be He-Man. I said after one of my routines, I finally put down the weights and I was like really tired. And I was like, "I have the power." You know, I was trying to say it at like my weakest moment. "I have the power." So like, this is what I'm saying though. Like the basic design visuals of a Beastman and a Skeletor and even a Merman and a Trapjaw, and just all of the characters. There's so many great fucking He-Man characters. It's just sort of absurd. I mean, like, just because they all needed to pop visually and be memorable on their own. And for that reason, there are just like a plethora of visually incredible characters. There's a Filmation version of the Beastman, and there's been other depictions of Beastman, but the Filmation, like, done right, he looks great. He looks gnarly in the Filmation. And the Filmation's really kind of classic. It has this classic Conan kind of type vibe, you know, Frazetta vibe to it. And, you know, I think it holds up visually as like a piece of art. I wouldn't say that it was ever top tier anything, though certain episodes of the show are really cool and evocative and neat. And I mean, it's one of those shows, you know, kind of like Godzilla, you know, where like, you know, there are some bad Godzilla movies, but even you put those on sometimes. You know, a Godzilla movie is like, "Ah, it's Godzilla. Oh, yay. He-Man's fighting Trapjaw. You know, fun." and the visuals are so good. You're with it most of the time, I would say. But the follow-up, well, actually, I should say, the follow-up that they did, which was The New Adventures of He-Man, which like totally like missed the point and was just lame as crap. And they were like in space and the designs are really crappy, and I don't know what happened with New Adventures of He-Man. But in the 2000s, they did a new animated show, and I would highly recommend it to anybody. You know, it didn't set the world on fire, but it's great, and He-Man fans really appreciated it. The designs are incredible. The designs are by Four Horsemen Studios, and, you know, characters like Too Bad, who is just like one of my favorites as a kid. You know, I had all these toys as a kid, and the designs are really strong. They're really, really strong. You know, Evil Lyn, who's the number two to Skeletor, she's just got a great classic design for her. You know, and then even something as simple as, you know, the robot He-Man Faker, you know, who's blue or turns blue or however you want to set it up. I mean, like, just the simple evil robot version of the person. There's a lot of simple tropes like that in He-Man, and they're great. They're very, because of the purity of this He-Man type character and Skeletor, it's just good, evil, and all of the shades of good around He-Man and all of the shades of evil around Skeletor, and them warring for the planet. And, you know, and ultimately they haven't brought it grim enough and had He-Man have to take things back. And, you know, that's really where I think it needs to go. It needs to, you know, the story that I told a long time ago with my toys late at night, and I actually pitched Scott Knightlick, who was running the Masters of the Universe brand, but it was, things were out of his hands. I told him, I was like, "Any of these ideas resonate with you?" Because you know, he liked a lot of things. I was like, "Feel free to just steal them. Because I would love to see the toys. I want the toys. I'm in it for the toys, Scott." But my basic premise was that at like the height of the most major battle, Superman gets his hands cut off, and the sorceress sends him into the future. And now he comes back in time, and he's got he's into the future, and like things are different. And he's, you know, basically the whole world has been taken over, and He-Man's been gone for as many years as whatever. And somebody fits him with these robot hands, and you know, and he's, you know, doing the thing. Or maybe one robot hand, I don't remember what it was. But you know, it was something to bring him into the technology of the future that he was in. You know, so that I think maybe it was one hand, and he held the other hand was you know, hold the sword. You know, to, and he has to like relearn how to fight with his left hand, and slowly put the group back together. And Ram Man was dead and brought back to life as like a Frankenstein monster, and he finds them, and like, you know, and like, but because really the biggest problem with He-Man, besides him being sort of the least interesting part of his universe, which is why, like, you know, getting rid of the freaking secret identity and just like making him have to do like be a part of real things, decision making, and have the weight of being the prince and being He-Man and having to take care of this whole world really be on his shoulders, that really matters. But the second thing that's a problem in the Masters of the Universe in terms of the storytelling is He-Man's just got too many damn friends. It's just, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, classic He-Man storytelling. He-Man, now I've got you because I've got this person and this person, and aha, these two people will take you. And then all of a sudden, He-Man's friend shows up and he beats him. And then the skeleton's like, ah, well, this time I have a dozen people and you only have six. Like, he's got a lot already. And then, like, and then He-Man, oh man, six just wasn't enough, He-Man. And then Moss Man shows up with Zodiac or some fucking thing. And, like, you know, it's like, he's just friends for days. Friends for days in the Masters of the Universe. So, like, you know, really, that needs to be corrected for the storytelling to really get to the next level. And you have to really make Prince Adam earn it as He-Man in order to, you know, change the whole feel and be able to bring it forward. They have really struggled to adapt this thing, but the 2000X adaptation of the cartoon is fucking awesome. Highly recommend it. I don't know where it's available right now. I didn't like look beforehand here, but I'm sure you can find it probably on YouTube or whatever else, buried away somewhere. It is worth your time. The visuals are great, and the story's great. And you'll be really bummed out because the third season, I think it's the third season. Was it two seasons or three seasons? I think it was three. The third season ends on like a cliffhanger that Hordak and the bad guys from the She-Ra cartoon, who for me were just bad guys for He-Man because those bad guy characters were put out as part of the He-Man line. And those are some of my favorite bad guy designs. Hordak has such a great Nosferatu meets Dracula design, and his number two, Shadow Weaver's really great in her like red cloak, and she's just tall and floating off the ground. And Catra is a nice simple you know, negative to She-Ra, as is the other henchmen that were big He-Man toys for me, Leech and Tongue Lasher. Tongue Lasher, he had a green tongue that would come out of his mouth. I used to play with that a lot. And Leech, I would bring him into the bathtub with me, and I'd play with him on the bathtub wall and stuff. Be sticking him around. Right. He had suction cups on him. And Mantenna, whose eyes would like stretch up out of his head. And then there was Grizzlore, who I would always be getting wet, and then I'd have to dry him. It was just like this big, hairy, brown beast. And the 2000X redesigns of these characters are even better. They look so cool. A lot of these characters were made as these statue action figures. They're like action figure size, but they're like action figures that don't move. Oh my God. Some of them are so beautiful. I want to like pay somebody someday to take them and turn them into functional toys for me. They're so gorgeous. Like I said, I'm a big fanboy for Four Horsemen Studios. Eric Treadaway, shout out to you guys, everybody over there. They're just so talented. And these Four Horsemen sculpts of the Masters of the Universe statues, and sculpts from the action figure line, but the sculpts from the statue line are really nice. And then they went on to work on the Masters of the Universe Classics, where it was just sort of like a re-up version of the classic figures, done similarly, but, you know, just more modern and better. And, oh my God, there's so many great freaking toys there, and so many great things that, you know, great things that were, like, on the cutting room floor that, again, some great design from the friggin' 80s that they dusted off and rolled out in some spectacular fashion. Some great stuff that people just concocted for these lines. Like, I remember there's a great dragon. I forget what his name is, but that was added into the line that the Four Horsemen Studio sculpted, and it's just, oh, so fucking cool. So damn cool. And Scareglow and just like, there's so many great characters and great character designs. Scareglow, that makes me think of, so then now recently they did a new series. I'm told that the one that I didn't watch, which is the one that's like meant more for kids, that one's great. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I should really watch it this weekend with my kids, see if they like it. Cause, I would love to watch it. I have watched Revelations. I don't know if I finished the second season or whatever. I'd say Revelations is a mixed bag. Again, I don't really think narratively anybody's capitalizing on what's really there to be capitalized with this franchise. I think everybody's kind of missing the point majorly in so many ways. You know, it's about the possibilities. The possibilities of Beast Man is that there are Beast Men. The possibilities of Merman is that there are Mermen. The possibilities of the bee people and the flying people and all of the different races that exist on Eternia. Like, that place is just ready for war and factioning and so many different things. Like, there's just so many possibilities on what will happen there. And the original story that they tried to erase and then they kind of brought it back on the Revelation series, but I really... And actually, apparently this isn't the original story, but this was the one that I think stuck with the fandom and stuck with me, was that Skeletor is King Randor's brother. But he, because he was blue, he was ostracized. And that, like, the people who were blue were considered, like, bad or evil or something like that. And he was put out to pasture, kind of thing. And now he's on the outside exploring dark arcane magic to... you know, get revenge on his brother. And like, was he evil the whole time? Or did this ostracization of him make him evil? Like, these are amazing things to explore and discover. And that's a very good, sympathetic bad guy who ultimately does have a reasonable bone to pick with the kingdom as it is. But will the kingdom be better because of what, you know, what he does or anything like that? Yeah, man, I would love to tell some of these stories that I have in my head. And there's just like, there's so many, you know, there's groups in He-Man. You know, there's He-Man and his guys. And then there's Skeletor and his guys. And then there's Hordak and his guys. And then there's King Hiss and his guys. And that needs to continue because the world is so big and there's so many people to break in. And, you know, the one thing that I always saw from the Filmation series, and it was just like so dialed in, it would just be like Skeletor would be kind of dicks to his henchmen. And they'd be like, one of these days, Skeletor, I'm going to screw you good. You know, they'd just be like, screw this guy. He doesn't treat us good, you know, but like he's powerful kind of thing. And that is magic. That needs to continue. That's the fractioning of Skeletor's crew, them ousting him and it being taken over by Faker and Evil-Lyn, which was what I did in my toy thing. I had Evil-Lyn was like, Faker's got fucking He-Man's powers. Like, I'm going to romance this robot. And I'm going to toss Skeletor on his ass. You know, and then more disenfranchisement, you know, as the Beast Men leave and then Beast Man forms the Beast Men. You know, like, there's just like, you can Game of Thrones the shit out of Eternia and, oh man, it would be glorious. Just all of these great monsters and alien species and it's all right there. It's all lined up. It's so fucking ready and good and glorious. And nobody's really done it justice yet. Like I said, the 2000 series is good, but even that, I would say narratively, like, you know, really where it needs to go to hit the mainstream, hit everybody in the feels, and make people care and make people go, holy shit, I did not know fucking He-Man could make me give a shit. Like, there's a way. And and you know, some of the things that I'm talking about here are how you would do it. So yes, Scareglow design in the recent 2000, the Revelation series is great. I've got pulled up a list of characters here so I can talk about some of the things. Also, you know, Skeletor on Panther, the purple Panther. I was always a big fan of Black Panthers, and I always thought that was so cool. Characters like Spikor and Stinkor. Stinkor actually smelled. His redesign is great. There's just like such fond memories of Stinkor. What a simple idea. And like, these are like the type of characters that you wouldn't necessarily write in a thing unless you're really thinking abstract and you're being like cool. But like, in terms of as you're differentiating one action figure to the other action figure in simplicity, like, there it is. You know, like, there's a reason for it all. And it all, and coming up with ways to make that work and make that matter and stuff, and really that too, like, I think Masters Universe is such a fun bit because everybody's got a bit, and coming up with new ways to make all of their bits matter and not feel like a bit is the thing. And if you do that elegantly, you can really just like do a great job for forever. All the heavy lifting's been done here. Triclops is another great design, the guy with the three eyes. I love on He-Man's team, you got Manny Faces. That was a favorite toy of mine. We'd be flipping his heads, his monster face, his robot face, and his regular face. The Twistoids, who would spin around. Whiplash, who's like a big alligator dude, or Webstore, who's this like dark blue, purple, or spider dude. He's cool. So many. They made more. They've had more characters like through the classics line or whatever that are good. The Drago Man is that fire breathing dragon, and characters that they've made since, like the anti He-Man, who's just black and red. He's very cool, very stark looking, but just the visuals for these characters are just off the wall. I mean, so good. And then, like, even, like, there's tons of bad guys, like Entrapta and stuff on the Horde side of things, like, from that were made as dolls, but now have been made as classic characters, and I love them. I'll take any bad guys. So one of the factions that I did was I had Shadow Weaver had left Hordak, and she had her own faction because she had basically mind-controlled all of She-Ra's friends. And she had all of the She-Ra crew, all the princesses of power, like Natasa and whoever else, under a spell. And they all had, I painted all their eyes yellow. Actually, I should say my best friend Aaron Sparrow painted all their eyes yellow. Thank you, Aaron. And he also painted up that Ram Man Frankenstein style for me. It was so dope. I lost it in the fire. I'm so sad about that. And they were just like her zombie slaves. So like, she would show up and her faction were all these mind-controlled bitches. Who are in their bright and shiny costumes and like kicking ass and being nasty bitches. The recent show, the idea of sidelining He-Man is not the worst idea if it's going to grow He-Man. The way they did it and the way they rolled it out and certain things, it's like, because it came out, it got leaked, and then they denied that it was happening, and they should have just said, yeah, you know, but like, it's to grow the character and like for him to come back. But then what they did with Teela was they just kind of like made her just a bit too butch. Like, she's just was always like that tomboy who He-Man had, and they'd been, you know, that's like a Mary Jane, Peter Parker kind of relationship for the audience. And they, you know, put in that friend, the black chick Astra, which, like, I don't know what that bitch is doing there. If you told me, hey, we need another minority and we need another girl, like, all right, cool, and I'd come up with somebody for you, and it would be of the vein of the Masters Universe characters in some way. And I don't know if we'd call her Cybladia, and do something like that with her. but you know, you make a character who's interesting, who has like a thing, and that character doesn't have a thing. So like, what was the point of that? Like, you introduced a character who's not going to stick with the fandom in any way, shape, or form because she's just some asshole. Like that's a disservice to the minority that you're adding to the thing, and it's a disservice to the female that you're adding to the thing. If you're going to add a female to add more representation, well, do a fucking good job on it and make her somebody that everybody would want to own. Make her an action figure people would want to buy. You didn't do that with Astra at all. I think that's her name, Astra. So that was some big problems. The way they rolled all that stuff out was big problems. And, you know, still dealing with secret identity bullshit and other stuff. You know, it was cool to see the sorceress's, like, thing get moved forward or whatever. And, you know, like, I'm fine with it because for me, I'm like, cool, I know how to fucking fix this property. And they still haven't done anything to fuck it up that, like, wouldn't seem thematically whatever. I'll just bring him into the future. Started at the final battle. And then, ba-boom, lost a hand, sent it to the future, get my sword if you can. Something like that. He-Man, da-da-da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, He-Man. One of my favorite stories of my life was working in construction for my ex-father-in-law's construction company. And he used to work with mi amigos, who, you know, big group of different people, but you know, we'd be working together all the time, and I'm always singing songs to myself and shit. And I was working one day, and I'm going, He-Man, and Gabriel looks up at me, and he like pushes me in the shoulder, and he goes, He-Man, man, 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 which was a reference to, it's like, He-Man, man, 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 man. Like, there was like an echo on the show sometimes when they would say it. And he was like, I know He-Man, He-Man, yeah. So like, it was just really nice bonding over He-Man. It, like I said, there's some real just universal, simple shit going on in the Masters of the Universe franchise that are just like so lovely. So what else should I talk about here with when it comes to He-Man and Master Universe? Well, they've made some comic books and they made a movie. Some of the comic books have been great. Some of them have been eh. I haven't read plenty of them, actually, because my buddy Tim Seeley has been doing like a bunch of He-Man stuff for a little while, and normally I would be reading it just to support a friend, but I've been kind of out of things. So like I've been, when I do read, and now I've been reading a lot more now, but when I have been reading, it's been like, oh, well, I really want to read that. I really want to read that. I really want to read that. So I've been picking other things over it, especially because in general, I don't find that really much of anyone has cracked the He-Man code. I think 2000X is the closest we've got. I think there's so much more juice to squeeze out of that baby. But there are some good things. I forget the fucking company that was doing the books for a little while in the, I guess maybe early 2000s, around that time, yeah, mid 2000s. But they had done a great job with the property, and if you can find any of those old books, they did a lot of like single issues on individual characters. Like I remember there was a Beast Man individual issue that was really fun. That stuff was great, and the artists that they got, especially the artists on the covers, but a lot of the interiors were really great too. Those things were really, really good. And the classic comic books, the ones that came with the toys, they are neat. They run a range. There's some amazing talent that participated in working on some of those things. And I may be crossing some wires, but Bruce Timm and Paul Dini separately were both involved in He-Man. I think maybe Paul Dini was involved with the cartoon, the Filmation cartoon, and Bruce Timm involved in some of the early comics. Pretty sure that's right. But there was a lot of talent, and so much of the talent, though, was talent who was building on inspiration, very clear inspiration from the work of Frank Frazetta and similar artists of the time, you know, who were depicting various barbarians and warriors and stuff, and you know, and they took that barbarian aesthetic and then they added a lot of technology and a lot of like super magic kind of shit. And that's the Masters of the Universe. You got just like all these archetypes, you know, all these people representing different races and different tribes and different kingdoms. It's very cool. I mean, really, like, the shit's so fucking cool. And, you know, as Hordak being this above ancillary to Skeletor, who's, you know, running the whole, empire, you know, from far away, and Skeletor is like his minions, you know, to take over the earth kind of thing. And like him, you know, being an even bigger bad guy with more power, and there's a setup for like a Horde Prime above him. A lot of it kind of takes some cues from Star Wars, like when you get into like the She-Ra stuff and whatnot. But that stuff just goes to make Eternia and She-Ra and the mythology of the Hordak so great. Like, because She-Ra, like Masters of the Universe, you know, He-Man, the Filmation, and I mean all of them really that play on the basis of Prince Adam getting these powers, whatever. It's like like I said, he's got a lot of friends, he's got all the power in the world, he always wins. She-Ra, on the other hand, she was kidnapped and raised by the bad guys, and now she's an escaped runaway from the establishment and is fighting a revolution against the Horde, who is holding keeping the people at bay. Like, that's some real shit that She-Ra's up to. It's crazy. And honestly, like, that's so cool that exists, because that exists in this world. And like that realism of these types of things, like, yeah, the reason why I love Black Panther so much is because he's a king. He's a king, and it means something. He's got a responsibility to his constituents. Additionally, he has a responsibility as a superhero to like go and save the world. But at the end of the day, he's also a king. And same thing with He-Man. You know, he's going to do these things, whatever. But like, he's also a king. He's got to answer these. Well, He-Man's not the king. His dad's the king. But like, he's in that similar position. You know, he has to please his father and please his mother on behalf of the kingdom, all these things. So the drama's there. Like, it's just so built in. And people like me, who are Masters of the Universe fans, who have been playing with these toys, dude, we just like, oh my, we've seen this world in our minds for years and years. It's right there. It's fucking beautiful. And just please do it with practical effects. Can you imagine practical effects? Masters of the Universe. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, honestly, like, you know, I think a lot of mainstream stuff, there's like a lot of mainstream things that because I've gone independent, and there's a lot of mainstream things that I wouldn't necessarily like move an inch for. But if they were like, yo, dude, help us fix and do Masters of the Universe right, like, oh, can I please? Can I please? Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh, so good. So good. Just think about all the monsters. Like, you gotta go on like after the show and like go like do a search of just Four Horsemen, MOTU, Masters of the Universe. Figures, and just like take a look at like just all the different toys that they made and the different sculpts, and then look at the 2000X toys, which are so cool. Like the tongue lasher, I keep thinking of in my head. He's the guy who had the tongue lasher thing, and he's like, he's almost got like a frog head with the tongue lasher thing and purple. But in the one that they did for the 2000X statues, his head is like the freaking size of half of his torso, and his tongue drips down, his big thick tongue down to the ground. And it's so cool. It's so cool. Just like everything, all the design elements were there that are there have just been amplified in the right ways to make all these characters truly unique. Because some of the limitations to the toys was that they were reusing lots of parts. So over time, some of the characters have been redesigned in like really ways to perfect them, just giving them a few unique features. But, you know, I'll talk a little bit about that before I wrap up on this subject, I guess. Well, and I'll talk about the movie, too, before we go. But the way action figures are traditionally, or I should say, the way action figure lines are traditionally built, are sort of like a piece at a time. You know, you make He-Man, and now you have a humanoid arm, left arm, right arm, torso. You've got his groin, his shorts. You've got his legs, right? And you've got those boots. And if you switch the head, and give him an afro, now you got Black He-Man. You know, you, now it's Clamp Champ. And all we had to do was change the colors, right? Now we make our Skeletor figure, and he's got like demon feet, and he's got like a kind of demon hands. But he's just blue torso and blue upper arms and blue upper legs and some of these new demon feet and calves we made, and a demon head. And now we got Skeletor, and we make a couple accessories that go on top of him to color him differently. Now we make Beast Man, and now we have a furry body because Beast Man's furry all over. Now we can make other furry characters. And now from Beast Man, we make the flying dude who's like furry for whatever reason, but they fly. They're weird ones. I forget what that dude's name is. I don't know. Flying, good guy. He's one of my least favorites. This is how the line goes. So it would open up, you know, the first wave would sort of establish different pieces. Then they would have those pieces and they would make more and more. And then as they had more and more pieces to work with, more toy options would sort of become available. They'd be like, all right, we'll use these arms. And they did a similar thing when they made the classics, Masters of the Universe classics line with Four Horsemen, which is awesome. I really appreciate that process. And, you know, Four Horsemen's doing it right now with their awesome Mythic Legions line. My company, years ago, we did the Mythic Legions first art book, which we did a comic book with Greg Weissman, which was super cool. And the Mythic Legions line is the same thing. You know, they make the characters that they make. Now they have those pieces. Now those pieces are applied to the next line. They add a couple more pieces. They add a few more pieces. They add a few more pieces. And it just slowly grows. And now when you see, you know, all the pieces that they have in this line that are available for them to pull from when they need it, it's incredible. You know, it's just, it really is wonderful to see, especially because, you know, they're an independent company doing it independently. So it's really cool how that develops, and it gives a lot of symmetry and not balance, but just sort of like matchiness to the line. You know, when you see, there's just a little bit of familiarity between all these things because they are sharing a lot of pieces, which is cool. You know, it keeps them all, you know, sort of in the same world, same dimension, reusing all those pieces in the way that they do. So it's very interesting how that comes about. And I think that the nature of the design of the Masters of the Universe toys and whatnot, and granted, you know, they can be embellished and whatnot, but not losing that, you know, these designs come from, there's so many interesting pieces of intellect that went into getting these designs to these even better places like they are now. I mean, if you go online and look up some like realistic depictions of Masters of the Universe characters, there are some paintings of these motherfuckers that look incredible. I mean, incredible. They're so like, it's because it's so unreal. Seeing it real makes it that much better. Just seeing it, it's so cool. And I wish they would do this correctly. I can't tell you how disappointed I was in the 80s when I saw the He-Man and the Masters of the Universe movie. I love Dolph Lundgren, but he can't speak, and he was not the right choice for He-Man. And the worst part of the whole thing was, they took He-Man out of Eternia. Eternia is where we want to go. Eternia were where the kids were going. We didn't want to bring He-Man into our world. We wanted to go to Eternia, this place where magic and technology existed, where all of these interesting different races lived together in relative harmony, it seemed. And He-Man was constantly fighting against the forces of the evil Skeletor, who was trying to get revenge on his brother Randor and take control of the planet on behalf of the Horde. You know, it's such a simple premise and like archetype and everything, but it works so well and it feels so good. Just picture He-Man riding a giant green yellow striped tiger. Imagine a real big saber-tooth looking tiger with green stripes with yellow stripes and green fur. And he's on a red saddle. And this guy is so invulnerable. The people with guns and laser things all around, and he's got his shirt off, wearing an H on his chest and holding a sword above his head, resonating with power, screaming, "I have the power!" Running into a horde of evil monster men, Beast Man and Skeletor and Merman and Too Bad and Stinkor and Clawful and Whiplash and Triclops and Faker and all these fucking awesome, great, amazingly designed characters. When they adapt this stuff, and they will again, they will try again, if they get the visuals right for a live action, and if they set it in Eternia, it will be successful. If they can go beyond that and do the type of things that I think really need to be done to just take the brand to the next level so that people can see the depth that is already there. But again, it's like Godzilla, you know, you got to be the kid looking at it from the right angle going, oh, this is so interesting. What's his story? What's that story? What's it like on Eternia? You know, Eternia is a place you want to go to. And I mean, really, like that's one of the cool things about the old Filmation cartoon, too, of like that aspect of it being in Eternia and seeing some of these cells and these people and the streets of Eternia and the regular people in Eternia. And in these alien worlds, too. Like, it's just, it feels, I don't know. I want to say it feels right. It feels like that's the world I should be living in. Me and the aliens. Where are all my alien brothers? I don't know if that's it. But it just feels so immersive and so real, you know? Just instead of a planet full of different types of people, it's a planet full of different, majorly different types of people, you know, different types of races. And some of them are cool and some of them are not so cool, and some of them like to be kept to themselves, and some of them are trying to take over the planet, and some of them are fighting to save the planet. It's just, you know, it's as Justice League as you fucking get, but in a great setting that lends itself to really grounded storytelling, sword and sorcery type of shit, and also really highfalutin and interesting science fiction type of storytelling. It's all there for you. It's all there for anybody good who can possibly write this stuff. And the visuals are just spectacular, man. Like I said, I still think that He-Man needs a robot hand, big robot fist, I think would be the thing. You give him a big like oversized robot fist, and then he has a sword and a robot fist, and then I think he becomes the He-Man that we all want. He's just need to bring him into the thing or whatever. And he just needs to be like, you need to see him all grizzled and like with a freaking cloak of skin, animal skin around his back, and traveling town to town by himself or with his Frankenstein like Ram Man companion because he can't find his friends, and he's scarred up from past battles, and he's been doing this a long time, and he's lost a lot of friends because Skeletor just won't stop. Like, That's the He-Man. He's going to overcome it. And like, you know, it's like you really got to take him full Conan place, but then also bring some of that technology into him, I think is an important thing. Or you can give him a laser eye too. That's all right too. But I think the hand is a cool one because then it gets to be a little like Fisto. And Fisto's just a super simple concept that just is fun. Who doesn't like Fisto? Fisto! Fisto punch! I don't know if he says that, but that's probably what I said when I did the thing. Fisto punch! So, the Masters of the Universe movie, it just bombed on so many levels. Granted, there's some like practical effects and some monsters that are fun, and the dude who played Skeletor, he really went out of his way to do a good job. And you know, so there's some things to like about it. And they made some toys of some of the movie things more recently, and that's kind of grown a few of the designs and things on me. But in general, I was just not fond of it. You know, Blade and the guy who's like the replacement for Beast Man, I forget his name, and the main monsters, the thing, they lack color. They pulled all the color out of the fucking thing, the property. Oh my God. the property known for its color, and they were like, ah, let's take all those colors away. No, that was stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. If you make another live action thing, don't take away the colors. The colors is like a fucking strength that Masters of the Universe has. You know, one of the weaknesses of Dune, the Dune franchise, is it just looks like sand. You know, everything's fucking black and gray and sand. Sand colored. It's brown. It's like browns. Yeah. It gets boring. You know, like for me, like my office, I'm just surrounded by posters and colorful things. Art therapy, color therapy. And like, you know, Avatar, people loving Avatar, everybody's going to see Avatar. They're going to see Avatar because it's a beautiful spectacle of color. Masters of the Universe, beautiful spectre of color. Eternia, beautiful spectre of color. Show that shit off. Like, that's it, man. That is what will make a beautiful world, you know? It's like, and if you're going to go the freaking, you know, secret identity thing and all this shit, man, start right from the beginning. Cast somebody, you know, young, who can grow into being Prince Adam or whatever. And, you know, and start with Man-at-Arms and Teela and just, you know, have him meet a friend. And then he's got, you know, four or five people at the end as he goes to fight Skeletor and a few of Skeletor's minions. And then, you know, grow the branches of his army with the next movie and introduce more characters and do it like that. Do it right. And, like, just don't, you know, they're not goofs. They're real characters. Treat them right. Make them matter. Make their relationships matter. Like, I'm telling you, Masters of the Universe is rete for prime time. It is the coolest fucking franchise there is. It just hasn't been tapped for its full potential. This past Monday, there's a link now. Like, if you go on to Kickstarter and type in "fucking for our future," number one, my book will come up, and you can sign up for notifications. This book that we did is so fucking funny. No pun intended. It is the craziest thing I've ever written. I never imagined that I would write anything like it, but I'm so proud of it because it's so smart and cool and funny and interesting and sexy and neat. And we get all these covers, and we're just offering such great, great stuff. Like the covers that were made, we brought in this colorist who just doesn't this incredible style of coloring that really makes it human. Like, you know, the skin has texture and stuff, and like, he did such a good job on all of our covers, and the book is so great. Dizzy Arnold, our artist, me and Dizzy did the whole book together, other than this color artist Ruvian, who we brought in, and our friends who we brought in to do the variant covers. The book is just so good. It was such a labor of love. We had such a great time doing it. And I really hope that you guys will check it out. It's going live in 30 days, but you sign up right now and you can sign up for notifications. And then as soon as it goes live, they'll let you know. And yeah, there's some awesome early bird specials this time for the campaign. Like, if you get in there ahead of everybody else, because you signed up for notifications, there'll be some things that you can get before anybody does. Every Monday night, if you haven't heard yet, I do a music show. If you love music, it's called All Your Favorite Bands Suck, and it's basically just me talking about all my favorite bands. Last week, I did a band that's relatively new to me called the Detroit Cobras, but their singer died 2 years ago, and I just got turned on to them 2 weeks ago. When I found out that the singer died, I decided I really wanted to do an episode of the show on the band because they were so great, and she had such a great voice. So many episodes beyond that. It's all sorts of music, humor, and rap, and rock, and punk, and, you know, largely things that are marginalized by the mainstream or not given as much credit by the mainstream as they deserve. Anyway, I do that show every Monday night, and I'd love it if you checked it out too. Anyway, Coolest Geeks, I love you guys so much. I really appreciate you listening to my show, like always. I mean, I really do. I'm not here to fucking talk to myself or whatever. I love this stuff, and the whole point of me starting the show in the first place was that, like, I wanted to talk about it and hope that maybe my perspective wasn't the only one. You know, maybe I wasn't the only one who felt like he was in the middle of a storm of raging people, and like, I wasn't really interested in that. I just wanted to enjoy the stuff I loved, you know, and the stuff we love is being affected by the stupid raging storm. It stinks, but I really love you guys for listening to the show and being a part of this journey with me. We're getting close to 100 episodes. I think this is episode like 94 or 95 for me. I'm not sure, but 100 episodes I'll be at soon. And I'm just like, I'm so proud. Thank you guys. Thank you guys for being my audience and helping me get here. It feels so damn good. You can write to me at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com. You can follow me on X at coolestgeekjbs. And I hope you'll join me this Saturday for an awesome episode of the show. I think I might do call an audible and do Invincible because I just finished the second season of the show and I think it's so great. I'm such a big fan of the comic too, though. So I was thinking maybe I might do Invincible on the comic and the show next week. I don't know if I have that much to say about it. Figuring it out. Anyway, come join me on Saturday where I will bring you some awesome bit of geek culture that you will fucking love. And join me again next Wednesday for another awesome episode of The Coolest Geek Alive. Love you guys. Bye. You've been listening to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe for more excellent geek culture content. Thanks for listening. It's my favorite part! Talking some shit. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Living the shit. My voice gonna be fucking awesome. Food in our mouth. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Getting them out. It's gonna be listen fucking to the awesome. Tell all your friends. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Call right our text. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Raising the bar. Fucking awesome. Fucking awesome. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Just wait. You'll see. You'll all see.
You'll all see. The Podcast Playground. All right.